Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And at the close of our podcast, we'll also have some reflections on the passing of former First Lady Nancy Reagan, who died Sunday at the age of 94. First, the politics, and then the tributes. Jim, we start with the good martinis, and for conservatives, Saturday turned out better than we were expecting, heading into what some called Super Saturday in the three states where there had been any polling, and the polling had been sketchy, regardless of how you look at it. Trump had the lead bigly, as he would say, in Louisiana. He was ahead by a handful of points in Kansas, and he was expected to win Kentucky quite comfortably. There was really no reliable polling in Maine. In the end, Ted Cruz more than doubles up Donald Trump to win in Kansas. He wins comfortably, but not by enough to take all the delegates in Maine. In Louisiana, Trump was supposed to win by a lot. He ended up beating Cruz by about 4 points. And in Kentucky, that one went late into the evening as well, won by about 4 or 5 points there. So Cruz actually got more delegates than Trump. And then Marco Rubio swept all 23 delegates in Puerto Rico on Sunday. So Donald Trump does not get a majority of the delegates, doesn't even get a plurality of the delegates coming out of this weekend. Obviously, he's still in the lead. Obviously, he's still the favorite. But when you look at some of the margins in these states compared to what we're expecting, there's reason for optimism here.
If you think that a contested convention is the best option for defeating Trump, then there's each one of these defeats is a good sign. Each time Donald Trump walks away with less delegates than he was hoping is a good sign. You could argue from these results some indication that the non-Trump forces are gathering around Cruz. But then again, there were some Rubio supporters who said this reflected strategic voting, that rather than moving Marco Rubio from a distant third to a closer third, they threw in with Cruz to give Cruz the win. That's the silver lining. I think there's a negative lining that could make a very good second martini, Greg.
So let's get right to it. And then there's obviously the strategy and the path going forward. Trump, of course, has the most delegates right now. He does not have a majority of the delegates currently given out. So he has work to do. And a lot of it obviously focuses on some of these upcoming winner-take-all states, particularly Ohio and Florida. Marco Rubio is staking, obviously, a lot of his campaign future on winning in his home state of Florida. For those who are thinking the others might get out of the way so Rubio could take on Trump one-on-one, not so. Ted Cruz opening up about 10 different offices in Florida. And then, of course, we're waiting to see if John Kasich can edge out Trump in Ohio. If Trump wins both states, he's very hard to stop. If he wins one, there's still a path to a brokered convention. If he loses both, then the fun really begins. So, Jim, the path is there potentially. Getting everybody else to agree on what that path is still just as much of a head scratcher as it always has been.
The short, easy way of summarizing it is, depending on the state, you're looking at 30, 35, 40% of the electorate of the Republican primary voters who are perfectly comfortable with Trump. And right. In fact, that's their choice. That's their guy. And a good chunk of that, you know, Trump supporters really only want their guy. They would see Cruz as an unacceptable compromise. They would see Rubio as the devil. They would see, you know, they aren't even thinking about John Kasich. Then you flip side. You have this 60% that is split amongst Rubio, Cruz, and Kasich. And a good chunk of them are in the hashtag never Trump category. That basically they see Donald Trump as a sellout of all conservative principles, that there is no upside, that he's unnervingly authoritarian, that he lies about everything, that he flip-flops about everything. And on most topics, it sounds like he hasn't spent more than 2 minutes thinking about the policies behind these things, that he's simply an attitudinal Republican, the perfect definition of Republican in name only. Greg, I don't know how you square that circle, and it's increasingly clear I don't think you do. I think one group is going to walk away from the convention deeply, deeply unhappy, and they're probably not going to support the choice of the other. The question is it better to go into this electorate with 60-some united on a non-Trump option, or is it better to go with the Trump option and hope that he brings in enough Democrats and independents and other groups to lead a nominal Republican in name only to victory? I would not want to be Reince Priebus right now. I've been very critical of him, but I think it's increasingly dawning on Republicans that there is a divide here that you're just not going to be able to patch up because they are fundamentally different views of what the movement should stand for, what the party should stand for, and what the country should be.
Yes, that's the really bad news, is that no matter what happens out of this convention, you're going to have a sizable chunk of people who are inclined or perhaps recently inclined to vote Republican that are going to be deeply unhappy. Your more immediate problem is the catch-22 for your hashtag Never Trump crowd. For those who want to clear the field, that means Trump is probably going to take one or both of those winner-take-all states, which will make him very hard to stop at the convention. And if you don't want him to take both of those states, you're going to have a more crowded field for a considerable time here if both Rubio and Kasich win their home states. So however you want to slice it, there's no simple answers coming anytime soon on this.
Say, do we have any good crazy martinis, Greg? Because I could use one right now.
I wish it were a happy crazy, but no, this is a very deeply disturbing crazy martini. This is courtesy of CBS with some analysis by Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air. Navy SEAL teams, you know, some of our most elite special ops warriors. Yeah, they don't have enough combat rifles to go around, even as these highly trained forces are relied on more than ever to carry out counterterrorism operations and other secretive missions, according to SEALs who have confided in California Congressman Duncan Hunter. He's a Gulf War vet. After SEALs return from a deployment, their rifles are given to other commandos who are shipping out, said Hunter, a former Marine who served three combat tours. This weapons carousel undercuts the train like you fight ethos of the U.S. Special Operations Forces. And it gets worse. Ed points out that this can't possibly be a funding issue. And then CBS, in its report, in case anybody didn't already know this, sharing rifles may seem inconsequential. It's not. The weapons, which are outfitted with telescopic targeting sights and laser pointers, are fine-tuned to individual specifications and become intensely personal pieces of gear. Hunter says, quote, they want their rifles. It's their lifeline. So let them keep their guns until they're reassigned desk jobs at the Pentagon. Jim, there's a lot of places we can cut spending. There's a lot of priorities we have. The fact that this is a concern shows you just how far off we are on both.
Each time you think, oh, we've seen the absolute worst in government incompetence. It can't possibly get any worse than this. That's one of the things, the phrases I keep telling people never to say out loud, because that guarantees it will get worse. We've seen the Secretary of Health and Human Services tell people to use a website that doesn't work. We've seen the Department of Veterans Affairs have veterans leave them dying, waiting for care, and having all kinds of applications just never get processed and all that stuff. But this, I think, would be the most vivid and unbelievable example that in a Pentagon that's got a multi-billion dollar budget, that it cannot find money for the rifles for the SEALs. Because you figured they'd be taken care of. You'd figure they'd be important enough that you don't want to send these guys. Oh, yeah, that's okay. You two share a rifle. You just kind of wonder what happened at that moment. If this really is the case, it's coming from a member of Congress. You don't think they'd be, you know, they think they'd check something out like this before it goes forward. Just the ultimate logistical snafu, and just kind of a leading indicator of how the government, which wants to have more and more power and more responsibility, falls down on the job at very basic tasks, like make sure the military has enough guns.
All right, on to the tribute now. And of course, I think just about everyone's aware that late Sunday morning, we learned of the passing of former First Lady Nancy Reagan. For 52 years, she was married to Ronald Reagan, First Lady of California for 8 years, First Lady of the United States for 8 years. And Jim, there's a number of things she'll be remembered for. I think at the very top of the list, of course, is the Just Say No campaign, as well as her tireless advocacy for Reagan, her care for him in that horrific decade that he deteriorated from Alzheimer's disease. And there's two clips here that I think encapsulate that. This is from an ad that ran in movie theaters in the 1980s, and it looks like Nancy Reagan is sitting there in the theater with the way this is lit, and she's talking about the need to say no to drugs. And then she's also joined in this same ad by the most memorable speaker from the 2012 Republican convention.
The thrill can kill. The drug dealers need to know that we want them out of our schools, neighborhoods, and our lives. And the only way to do that is to take the customers away from the product. Say no to drugs and say yes to life.
Of course, your local drug pusher may tell you a little something different about these drugs. And who you believe is up to you. But then again, if you go ahead and try them, at least it won't be out of ignorance. Just stupidity.
There you go, Clint Eastwood weighing in on the drug war in the 80s. And then perhaps Nancy Reagan's most poignant moment at the 1996 convention, her husband already announcing that he had Alzheimer's at that point, and her final words coming from his heart that he shared 4 years earlier at the GOP convention.
Let me close with Ronnie's words, not mine. In that last speech 4 years ago, he said, whatever else history may say about me when I'm gone, I hope it will record that I appeal to your best hopes, not your worst fears, to your confidence rather than your doubts. And may all of you as Americans never forget your heroic origins, never fail to seek divine guidance, and never, never lose your natural, God-given optimism. Ronnie's optimism, like America's, still shines very brightly. May God bless him, and from both of us, God bless America.
I think about this in a couple different ways. Number one, just in the past month, just some of the final figures from the Reagan era. Obviously, some are still around, but some of the more prominent ones, Antonin Scalia, who was appointed by Reagan, passing away, and now, of course, his beloved Nancy. And just the way that the kind of a chain reaction worked here. Reagan believed endlessly in the American people, and she believed endlessly in him, and we're all the better for it.
You know, Greg, you're right. The Scalia felt like a punch in the gut. With Nancy Reagan, it really does feel like the passing of an era. Marco Rubio spoke at CPAC on Saturday this weekend and generally got good reviews. But one of the lines that stuck with me is saying, we are the children of the Reagan Revolution, and recognizing that for all of us who are in our 30s, 40s, maybe even a little older than that, who became conservative or think of Republicans and think of this as you know, our, what we want the country to be. Ronald Reagan is, and you know, with Nancy Reagan being on his side, was kind of the core component of that. And my first observation as I kind of processed the news on Sunday is the recognition that, Greg, you and I and everybody around our age, we had no idea how good we had it during the Reagan years with Ron and Nancy in the White House. We just thought that's what a president and a first lady do. And obviously, if you spoke to people who were alive and you know, aware of the news during the preceding presidents, and I think you could argue a good portion of the following presidents, they really set the bar exceptionally high. And even if people kind of chuckle or roll their eyes at, you know, just say no seem kind of, you know, silly or hackneyed, you know, like there was an earnestness and an innocence there that all of a sudden it feels like is very much distant from America today. And, it, you know, at a time when our politics have gotten so crass and so horrific and just so unbearable to watch, the sheer class exemplified by Ronnie and Nancy, we look back to that with great envy, to wish we could get back to that someday. So these are a pair who will be intensely missed, and you know, hopefully at some point we can use them as role models for something better in the years to come.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Condolences to all of the Reagan family. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and please tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.